Richard Wurmbrand tells a story. He stood before Congress. I think you can look it up on the YouTube machine, but he's interviewed by Congress, or he testifies before Congress. Maybe it's 1968. Congressman asked him, said, why didn't you just leave? Or why didn't you just deny Christ? Like, why did you go through that? Or something. Or what would you give in exchange to not have had that experience? And he was in a, 15 years in a communist prison camp. And he said there was a night in prison there in underground, deep underground. And he said he wouldn't change that one night for any other experience in the world. He said, I've been to the Alps. I've been to California. I've seen the most beautiful places in the world. But one night we were in a prison cell and they had given us instruments. He said, they gave us instruments, the chains that they were shackled with. Right? They gave us instruments and they shook the chains in rhythm and they sang hymns. And he said, as we sung the hymns, every stone in the cell was shining like a diamond. And he said, and then other voices joined us that we didn't know about. Right? The angels were singing with them. And he was saying to be together with believers, worshiping God, is the most beautiful thing. And I hope that myself or none of us are ever in the position he was in, but if we are, we know God is with us. I'm trying to say how beautiful a time that was, but really I'm just like talking about being in prison. But just to say that I love being together with God's people in worship. We're going to go to a few places. Let's start in Psalm chapter 51. I want to speak about grace tonight. Shocking, right? God's grace and the economy of God's grace. We are all familiar, right, or becoming more familiar with economics, and as we grow and as our lives are more and more, we have bills and, you know, we're watching money. You just watch the money move through your account, right? Like it's like money, you just have a hose and it's like it's on, it's flowing from one direction and you just have to like control where it goes, right? Pointing it in one direction. But when you're a kid, it's easier, isn't it? Maybe it's easier. Like I do my chores, I get my allowance, I can buy my Lego or whatever it is. Like life is good. But then when you become an adult, you are more a part of the economics of things and you're considering it more, right? And you have kids and oh, that's this burden. And then not a burden, but I'm saying like a stress of, you know, whatever. It's stressful. But then you own a house, you have the cars, like there are needs for monies, and we understand how it works. Right? If we are short on money, we work hard, right? Or we ask Sal, and we work hard, and God provides, right? And by we know if what we put into it, we know what we will get out of it, and then we plan, and then we have, and we continue to live, right? We continue to buy food, we pay our mortgage, we pay our bills, we put gas in the tank, and life goes on. But grace is different. Grace is not based on our understanding of things. Grace does not relate to us based on what we put into it. But grace is wholly different. Psalm chapter 51 is written on the heels of David's sin. And it's, you know, not just his sin, but if we were to measure sin, it's a pretty bad one, right? Pretty bad snowball of sins where he has an affair with Bathsheba and then he kills Uriah and it is a burden to him, sin. How do I get rid of my sin? Could we approach our sin with the same understanding that we approach the economy or our bills or our life? The harder I work to refine it or the harder I work to put it away, then God will reward me with grace and he will give me victory over sin. That sounds good to us. Naturally speaking, that sounds about right. We say, yeah, that sounds good. You get what you pay for or you get what's coming to you. Have you ever said that to somebody who is, you know, maybe, done something wrong to you or cheated you or offended you, you say, well, you're going to get what's coming to you, right? And then it happens and you say, there, all is right now. You got what's coming to you. Well, when we approach God, thank God, thankfully, He does not say to us, you're going to get what's coming to you. Or you got what you paid for. Instead, He deals with us on a whole different economy, and that is grace. Here in Psalm 51, David, the king, the one who brought the glory to Israel, put it on the map in a big way, expanded the kingdom, filled the coffers with gold and like military victories, honor, the whole thing. He put Israel on the map. David sins. He sleeps with Bathsheba. She becomes pregnant. He tries to cover it up, so he kills Uriah. Shameful. If God were to deal with David and give David what was coming to him, he would have been killed. Remember when Nathan the prophet comes to David and he says, hey, let me tell you a story, David. Let me tell you a story. This is 2 Samuel chapter 12. Nathan comes to David and says, let me tell you a story. There was a poor man who had a little sheep, and that little sheep grew up in his house. He raised it as like his child. It slept in his house with him. It ate at the table with him. I don't know how he used the fork. But it was his, and it was part of his family. He loved it so much. But then his neighbor was wealthy, and he had many, many sheep. But his neighbor had a guest come, and he didn't want to take one of his own sheep. So he took the neighbor's only sheep that he loved, and he killed it, and he had a feast with it. Nathan goes to David, what should happen to that wealthy man? David said, off with his head, right? He should be punished more brutally than anyone in Israel. That is unacceptable. We don't treat each other that way. Yeah, he goes on and on and on and on. Nathan, some of the most hardest hitting words, I think, in the Bible. David, thou art that man. You are that man. We could have this mentality when we see others fail, we see others sin, and we could say, ah, well, they're going to get what's coming to them. God's going to deal with them. And I've had this thinking before too. We could say, we think about somebody else and we say, when are they going to realize that God's punishing them? And there we are on our little throne, our little self-righteous throne, and we are judging. Are we in the economy of grace? Am I thinking graciously? I'm not. But when I don't think graciously, thank God He is still gracious. And He deals with me according to something completely different. Here in Psalm 51, that's the condition David is in. He has just been exposed. His sin has just been laid out there, and Nathan has put him to task. David repents, and that's what this psalm is coming from. It's not coming from the words of Nathan. It's interesting. Nathan leads him to conviction, but Nathan doesn't go beyond that. David goes to God after that. David goes to God because he knew God was gracious. Sometimes we look for approval in front of people, right? Before I go to God, I want to run it by Brian to see if he thinks will he approve. And then I go and I get his opinion on it. I get his advice on it. And then I go to God and say, God, this is what Brian said. No. Nathan actually doesn't give David the input. God speaks to David. And this is what David comes away with. Have mercy upon me, O God. Psalm 51:1. Have mercy upon me, O God. Why should God have mercy on David? Well, look how much wealth he's brought to Israel. Look how much honor he's brought to the nation of Israel with his military abilities, right? His leadership, everything. He killed Goliath. Can't we give him some mercy because he killed Goliath? Can't we be merciful? No. We are leaving that economy of what David is worth and what David has done. And in our own lives, we need to leave our little economy also. When we are confronted with sin and convicted with sin, don't go back into your own little economics with God and say, okay, God, I'll do this. I'll do this. I'll feel really guilty for a week. And then hopefully by then you'll accept and we can move on from this thing. No. God deals with us according to a whole different thing. Have mercy upon me, O God, according to your loving kindness. According to your loving kindness. Oh, that's a whole different standard. That's a whole different thing. We could say, and you know, maybe if I get in an argument with my wife, and I could say, have mercy upon me, because remember we made vows. Have mercy upon me. Look, we're the ring. Have mercy upon me. We have to drive home together. Have mercy upon me. But when we come to God, it's different. We don't come to God and say, Lord, have mercy upon me. I did two devotionals this morning. Have mercy upon me. I've been reading the Psalms. Have mercy upon me. I told the cashier, God bless you today. Haven't I built up some stock with you? Have mercy on me. No, no, no. His mercy expressed to us is according to a whole different measurement, and it's His loving kindness. His loving kindness. So David is coming guilty. And read, you can read about how he felt about this sin in 2 Samuel 12 and all some of the other Psalms also. He says, I'm like a dead worm. I'm like a worm. And you're like, well, how about that for self-image? I'm a worm. What does a worm do? Just plows its head through the mud all day. Just brrr. Like, oh, I'm like, not, the sun can't even shine on me. I'm not worthy of it. I'm a worm. But if you will deal with me according to your loving kindness, I can stand. And you can change my countenance. You can change my thinking. You can change my attitude. You can change everything. And that's what happened. You can read the Psalm. It's amazing. But he says, have mercy upon me according to your loving kindness, according to the multitude of your tender mercies, blot out my transgressions. Blot out my transgressions. Black them out, right? Blot them out. Get rid of them. God does that. Colossians 2:14, it says that he blotted out all the handwriting that was against us, all the ordinances that I had failed in. He blots them all out with his blood, according to his mercy, not according to my effort, not according to my penance, not according to my guilt. I mean, isn't that some way you see a dog? Have you seen a dog do something wrong and it knows it does something wrong? Right? You choose the bed apart or something, and then you walk in the room and the dog's head is like hanging low, right? Oh, and you say the dog's name and it goes lower. We like to see that a little bit, right? We like to see that there's some kind of recognition. And raising kids, at some point they are little and they don't understand like the ramifications of things. Right? How do I make my kid understand the weight of a bad decision? That's an interesting thing. But it comes. And in a way, you want to see that. We want to see remorse. We want to see guilt. But we need to leave that economy when we are talking about our relationship with God. He doesn't want to see our guilt. He wants us to understand His grace. Yes, conviction is there. And in that conviction, we feel it. But it turns us back to His grace. Blot out my transgressions. He says later on in 51 verse 7, he says, purge me with hyssop and I shall be clean. Wash me and I shall be whiter than snow. If you do it, Lord, it'll be effective. If you purge me, if you wash me, then the result of your washing will be that I am whiter than snow. The effect of your grace is that you will make me whiter than snow. By my own self, I can't do it. It's like a snowy day in the city. Isn't it nice? You see the city streets are dirty. Sometimes they can be dirty. There's litter and all this. And then it snows a few inches and it's like everything's just nice. Oh, it's so refreshed. It looks beautiful even. I remember living in Baltimore City when it snowed. We say, oh my gosh, Baltimore is beautiful with the snow, right? But then it starts to melt, right? And the salt and the dirt and the mush and all the mud and all this stuff. And it's like, ooh, wow. It's just like, ooh, it was just nasty, right? That's the way it is. If I try to do it myself, if I try to purge myself or wash myself whiter than snow, I cannot do it. There could be like a little superficial covering for a little time, but eventually it wears off and I'm exposed again. But if God does it, if it's according to His mercy, if it's according to His loving kindness, if it's according to Him, then wow, He can make me whiter than snow. This is the way God deals with us. This is how He desires that we would come to Him. Now turn with me to Luke chapter 15. How many animals were in Luke? It was a cow, a sheep, and a goat. Three animals. Luke 15, we know the story. Right? There's two parables and a story here in Luke 15. What are they about? They're about lost items, right? A lost sheep, a lost coin, a lost son. We could say we get fixated on the prodigal son, on the younger son who left. But really there's a bigger story, and the bigger story is about God's grace. That the person who lost something in each one of these stories is the one who is heartbroken. If you think of the shepherd, he has 100 sheep. 99 are there, right? He counts it a few times. Oh, missing one. One. He leaves the 99 and he goes into the wilderness to find the one. That's gracious. That's gracious. In my economy, our economy, we can say 99%. That's pretty good. I will hold the 99 together. I don't want to lose one. I read something today. Imagine if he left the 99 and as he was going after the one, a wolf came and got 42 of the other ones. We could say we cut our losses and it is what it is. But grace is different. Grace pursues us. The one who is affected the most by this is the shepherd who has lost the one. And he goes into the wilderness, into the darkness, into the danger. And he finds the one sheep. What a great picture of Jesus. That he came down into the wilderness of this world, into the darkness of depravity, without a second thought. And he picked us up and he carried us out. And there is joy, the joy is in expressing grace to the lost sheep. That he could pick it up and carry it back. The lost coin, the woman is anxiously sweeping the house until she finds the one coin. We could say, well, how much effort is it worth? If I lose a dollar in the street, how much effort, how much time I could value my time? Is it worth an hour of time searching for a dollar when I could work for an hour and make a little bit more than a dollar, right? Like the economy, the economics isn't there, but it's the pursuit of something that is hers and she goes after it and she finds it and she rejoices. She actually calls other people together, brings everybody into the house and says, celebrate with me, I found the one that I had lost. Grace is on display in our lives. Right? Imagine if Christ saved us by grace, but then did not allow us to express grace ourselves. Wouldn't that be a boring faith? That if I was not able to be gracious, if I was not able to express God's grace, live in it, but then also express it to other people. What a privilege that is. That I receive God's grace, and it's not just for me, but it's so other people can see how gracious God is. We see that in David's life. I mean, we are reading Psalm 51 thousands of years after he wrote it. Why? Because it's an expression of grace that is for us. We see it in David's life. We see it in these parables. We see it, and we call each other together and we say, hey, God's gracious to me. Let me tell you something about how gracious God is. And then finally, we see the story of the parable. The parable of the lost son. The story of the lost son. The older son, in the end, the older son is there. And he says, how come I've never been given anything? What an attitude that is. We could have this attitude towards God. We could say, Lord, why are you being gracious to this person? If you are being gracious to him, then what are you going to give to me? In my economy, I am scaling this thing, right? He wasted everything. He embarrassed your name. He left. If he gets all of that, then I must be getting so much more. Oh, that's my economy. There's the parable in Matthew chapter 20. Remember in the guys who worked in the vineyard? There's four different guys, four different groups of guys. One early in the morning, Armindo goes and he says, hey, who's ready to work for a day, right? 12-hour day, you're going to work for me, pouring concrete. What's the negotiate? Oh, well, this is the day's wage of denarius. Okay, they shake hands on it. The guys are working in the field. 3 hours later, he goes and he finds coffee break. He goes, he finds some more guys, brings them into the field. Lunch break, he goes, I find some more guys, brings them into the field. Like late afternoon coffee break, a guy I worked with, it was ice cream, Snickers, and coffee, 2:30 every day. He brings them into the field, they work. The 11th hour, one more hour of work in the day. One group of guys have been working for 11 hours, they're ready to wind down. New guys just get into the fields. Long enough just to see what's going on, the day's over. Okay, time to pay. He starts with the guys who had been there for 1 hour. He says, okay, here is a denarius, a day's wage. Oh, what about the guys who've been working for 12 hours? He starts thinking. He starts calculating, right? He starts counting. Ooh, if he got that for 1 hour, then I get 12 times that because I work for 12 hours. But by the time he gets down to the guy who's been there all day, what, same deal, one denarius. He says, hey, these guys are upset. Say, hey, you can't do that. You can't do that. And the master says, what are you talking about? Didn't we agree on this price? You worked the hours we negotiated, the price we negotiated, what's wrong with that? He says, but he doesn't deserve it. And the owner of the field says, but who are you to determine who deserves my money? Like, isn't it mine to do as I please? If I want to be kind, can't I be kind? And this is what I'm saying. Imagine if Christianity was like that, where I measured things based on somebody else's receiving grace, and then I expected, and then I was bitter. And then I said, well, God, you owe me. Could we be this way? God, you owe me. How come they have a blessing? I've been in this church longer. I've been saved longer. I read more devotionals this week. How come they get a blessing? The guy's like, what is that to you? It's my blessing, my grace to give. And we can say, Lord, why are you being gracious to them? They don't deserve it. And he says, oh, okay, now I see the problem. You think you deserve grace. Oh, that negates grace. This is a whole different economy. God's grace, and he is free to express it and give it however he pleases. And when we meet God, and then we celebrate someone else who meets God, and we rejoice with them. But the older brother here in Luke chapter 15, he's stuck in this idea that the economy is not working the way that he anticipated. But the father comes out to him, and the father pleads with him. And he tells him everything that he has belongs to him. And he could have any of it at any time. And that's the freedom that we have in the grace of God. But the beauty of it is not in the son coming back. The beauty of it is in the way the father goes after him. It says that the father runs out to the son. Right? We think of the shepherd going into the wilderness, endangering himself, maybe embarrassing himself, maybe, but coming back with the sheep. The father running out to the prodigal son. I read a story today about a daughter who left home. She was young, 16 years old. She ran away because her parents were too strict, right? And they were keeping her from having fun growing up as a Christian. They didn't allow me to have fun with the people who had fun. Right? You ever felt that way? Lord, how come I'm not allowed to have fun? Right? They're keeping me from good stuff. So she comes up with a plan. She runs away at 16 years old, goes to Chicago, meets a man, right? And he grooms her and then destroys her. Right? For a year, he puts her up in a penthouse apartment, gives her anything she wants, and she's a queen. But then after that, she's out. She's on the streets. She's forsaken, right? Broken. Unwanted. And then one day she's sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, my golden retriever lives better than I do. So she calls home, and I was reading the story, obviously it was before cell phones. She calls home, leaves a message on the answering machine, said, I'm coming home. And she hangs up. She gets on, she said, I'll be at the bus station at 12 o'clock. She hangs up. And then she gets on the bus, 7-hour bus ride. In these 7 hours, she's thinking, how am I going to explain myself? I left home as an innocent 16-year-old girl. I'm going home as an addict who's been broken by the world. They won't accept me. If they're not even there, I'll just stay on the bus and I'll head into Canada or whatever. I'll just keep going and find a new place. And she was, and it's like this parable. She's imagining how is she going to greet her father? How is she going to greet her mother? And in our economy, we think this way. When I sin, I think, how am I going to come to God? How can I face God? What am I going to say? How can I soften the blow? All right, how can I take the edge off of his anger if he'll even listen to me? This is our thinking. The girl, the bus rolls into the station. She gets off the bus, and her whole family is there. There's 100 people in the bus station. Right? They all have party hats. They all have streamers. There's a big banner that says, welcome home. They're blowing things. They're making noise. They're rejoicing. And then her dad steps out and she starts her speech. She starts to explain herself. Daddy, you won't even love who I've become. And he doesn't even listen and he just embraces her. Right? What is it? My economy says they won't even have a minute for me. Maybe they won't even be there. But God's grace is there. God's grace embraces us. God's grace goes beyond our things, right? It goes beyond our screw-ups and our mess-ups, however monumental they might be. And he deals with us according to his loving kindness. Oh, it's beautiful. Are we able to express that in the world today? The only way we are is if we receive it ourselves. There can't be any counterfeit to this. There's no natural economy that can even come close to the grace of God. And just like the prodigal son, the father runs out to him and he embarrasses himself. Right? In the Eastern world, a father is dignified and they have the long garments and they walk and the son would come to him. But he pulls up the thing and he goes flying down the driveway and he kisses his son. You say, he has embarrassed your name. No, he has my name. Right? And we can think of the father embracing the daughter. Oh my God. Look, Dad, you could never screw up so much that you were not my child. Right? And how beautiful a story. How beautiful, right? Just completely turned around by the grace of God. This is the economy that we want to live in. This is how we want to relate to God. Don't take it for granted. Don't be familiar with it. Don't laugh at it. Don't say that's for another day, but live by the grace of God and allow it to work in you and change your ways and change your life and change your relationships and break things up in your life, right? Break up the fallow ground. How do we break it up? What's the fallow ground? It's the ground that hasn't been turned over. It's the ground that hasn't been broken up. It's the ground that I can't plant anything in because it's so hard and there's no nutrients in it. But the grace of God comes in like a rototiller and just breaks it all up and he turns things over in my heart and then there is fresh ground for him to plant things. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful. There's no sin that could be greater. Romans 5:20. Where sin abounded, no question it did abound, but there grace does much more abound. And that's the economy we live in, where there is an abundance of grace. And knowing that Jesus is willing to pursue us at any cost. He has paid the ultimate cost in pursuing us and expressing His grace to us. The cross, the embarrassments, the shame, right? Cursed is every man that hangs on a tree. He hung on a tree for us. He took the curse for us. Now we are free to relate to Him based on His grace, not on our economics of things. Right? We gotta get over that in relation to God. Don't come to God with a prepared speech of how guilty you are. Just come to Him in honesty and say, Lord, I did it again. Forgive me. And He is there. And I like the picture. The picture is that the Father is there, and there is some anger at the Son as He looks out on the porch. And you could think of the Father looking out the front window of His house, waiting for His daughter to come home, and being angry that she left, and being angry maybe that she's not living right. But as soon as He sees her, He is overwhelmed by love for her, and He can do nothing but embrace her. God is that way. He is not pleased with sin, but He knows when I come to Him based on His blood and based on the cross that I am completely free, and He can embrace me and bring me in, clothe me, feed me, clean me up, and send me on my way. Amen? Amen. Lord, thank You for Your great grace that You've expressed to us, Lord. Help us to live in this economy of grace, not in our own way, not in our legalism or our religion, but in grace, Lord. Thank You. In Jesus' name, amen.